Warning, this episode contains brain food that will lead to improved emotional and social intelligence. Thanks for tuning in to Harvesting Happiness today for a healthy serving of consciously prepared brain food. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen, your host. For more than 13 years, I've been handcrafting these sound ideas for better well-being. Each week, I love spotlighting diverse thinkers and doers who are contemporary trendsetters and change agents, devoting their lives to creating a better world in which to live. I invite you to listen up and change the way you think about human happiness. Our award-winning content is fresh, optimistic, and purpose-driven media that promotes well-being from the inside out. Alrighty then, let's dive in. This episode offers psychosocial education designed to inspire and motivate our listeners. The information provided does not constitute a therapeutic relationship nor a substitute for professional mental health care. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, call 911, go to your nearest emergency room, or for listeners in the United States, text 988 for the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. Thanks for joining me on today's show, where you will learn about psychonautics, cosmic exploration for skeptics and seekers. My guest today is Matt Zeman. He is a dedicated explorer of the inner world and a passionate advocate for the thoughtful and responsible use of psychedelics. With a master's of science in psychology and neuroscience of mental health with honors from King's College London, Matt has studied the effects of psychedelics on the mind and the potential for these experiences to serve as a catalyst for positive transformation. He is the author of Psychedelics for Everyone, a beginner's guide to these powerful medicines for anxiety, depression, addiction, PTSD, and expanding consciousness. Matt, thanks for joining me today.
Lisa, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, this is going to be a good conversation. Let's talk about how you got interested in psychedelics.
Oh, I fell into it by accident. I had some friends who had hired a guide to do a guided magic mushroom or psilocybin journey. They said, do you want to come do this with us? I was like, no, I do not. I'm a control person. I don't even drink that much, let alone do drugs. No. But I was curious, and the more they talked about, hey, you love to learn, you love to travel, this is a chance to really dive into yourself, I ended up agreeing. And in that first like 6-hour journey, it completely changed the way I look at and interact with the world. I reconnected with my mom who passed away when I was 22. She was 49. I understood more about how I looked at death. I found a new relationship with God after I kind of swore away from God after my mom died. It just completely changed my world. And I wanted to know more, learn more, and see more.
Wow. Were you a student at the time, or this was after?
Before. I was just another entrepreneur building businesses, doing that kind of stuff. And right after this journey, I was like, oh my goodness, I need to understand more. I don't know enough about psychology. I don't know enough about mental health. So I went back to school at that point. But then I also went and traveled around and experienced a number of different types of psychedelics with different types of people who deliver them, to keep learning about my consciousness and myself. And it's just been an incredible journey, Lisa.
So talk a little bit about the different kinds of journeys that you have been on and how you help educate and guide others to find their right place when they are curious about these medicines.
I like the way you're phrasing that. It's very personal. And even though my book is called Psychedelics for Everyone, I don't mean everyone should take a psychedelic. There are definitely some people who it's not a good fit for.
Yeah.
There's certain genetic backgrounds. There's certain substances that they might already be taking, or prescriptions that they might already be taking, that just doesn't sit well or fit well with these. But I talk a lot about kind of why are you interested in psychedelics? Because there's kind of three ways that psychedelics can meet that person. They can meet them in kind of a medical model. In America, that's ketamine is kind of the only legal psychedelic in all 50 states. And for those who want to say, hey, I need a diagnosis and I want to be greeted by a professional and I want to know if my medicine comes from a pharmacy, that's a good model for them. Coming up, hopefully the beginning of next year, MDMA will be re-legalized in America. And they've just finished their phase 3 clinical trials on people with treatment-resistant post-traumatic stress disorder. Beautiful work. Amazing.
Yes, amazing. Yeah.
67% no longer qualified as having PTSD. 88% had a clinically significant improvement in their symptoms. Amazing.
That
is
incredible. And
then psilocybin is probably a year or two away. So that's really wonderful option for those who want the medical model. Those in Oregon get to have access sooner, Colorado sooner. But for many people, medical model, these are your kind of options. Others want to meet psychedelics in more of a spiritual model. They are looking, they're saying, hey, we are in a country founded on religious freedom. I'm in a state, most states who have religious freedom clauses in their constitutions. And I don't want to talk about diagnosis and I don't need to have a medical professional. I mean, we've seen almost a little bit over 200 psychedelic churches emerge in the last few years across the country. And these are people who have a sincere religious belief that by taking this, but they'd use the term entheogen, this medicine to connect to a higher power, that by taking an entheogen, that's what happens. And they can continue to work on themselves. So it's a twofer. So first it's like, what do you want to do? And then some people choose to do psychedelic tourism where they're going to fly to Costa Rica or Netherlands or Jamaica and go that route. And others say, no, I'm okay doing an underground psychedelic church and try to get connected that way. So lots of options for lots of different people, depending on why they're interested in the medicine. Now you told me that you were a skeptic about all this, and I'm curious kind of where that skepticism comes from and what that means for you.
Well, the skepticism, I don't think, is in the efficacy of the medicine. Mm-hmm. I think the skepticism comes in the approach, you know, and I think I'm somewhere in the middle between this psychedelic tourism as being a commercialization mm-hmm. of the ancient ritual, and then the flip side of the need to be in a medical environment being sort of over-controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's maybe healthy skepticism. It's not really skepticism of the fact that it works.
That's completely, completely fair, completely understandable. And then sounds very healthy.
Yeah. And then my personal aversion, I think, is just fear of being out of control. And I think that's something that you and I talked about that you shared as well.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that I'm going to take this medicine and for the next 6 hours, I'm going to be in a non-ordinary state of consciousness where kind of everything is different. The whole world is different. Yeah, that was super uncomfortable for me in the beginning. Now I really relish those times and getting to turn off my inner narrator, getting to have these fresh set of eyes looking at the world, have a fresh heart looking at the world and feel what that feels like. Oh, I love it. But it's certainly something I was very nervous about in the beginning.
I like what you said about a fresh heart. I think that's very, very interesting. So what I hear you imply by that is that there's such a radical paradigm shift in this altered state that it could upend one's prior belief system.
Absolutely. That's certainly possible. And for someone like me, like I'm a doer. I hide behind my spreadsheets and my to-do lists and I just get things done and I'm thinking all the time. And historically, I haven't lived in my heart. I haven't lived in my emotional zone, or I've reserved those times for special occasions. And since moving to here, I can live in this, I can have emotion and heart be part of every day and every encounter. And that's just being aware of that is different for me. And taking more time to just be aware of kind of the beauty that's all around us every day is kind of a tremendous gift that these medicines have given me.
So within the business paradigm of this, I'm just talking about practicality now, mm-hmm. like on the earth-based matters, is your perception that this become so widely available and so commercialized that one could go to, you know, as one would go to, I don't know, a juice bar, you know, or an oxygen bar? Or is this something that is reserved for a more sacred process?
Oh, such a tricky question, Lisa. So I think a lot about this. In the old days, way back when, there was just healer. And the healer was both the medical healer and the spiritual healer. And as Western society has developed, we have really carved out two very distinct roles. We have medicine people who are pure science, and we have spiritual people who are pure spiritual. And psychedelics play in both realms, as we've talked about. So the trick is this. I understand that if we were to say, hey, psychedelics belong in the realm of spiritual, it would be a very fair argument to say, well, wait, they don't have the latest knowledge about my mind and the body to keep me safe. Okay, fair enough. And conversely, if we say, well, it belongs in the hands of science, it's also fair to say that by and large, they don't have enough knowledge of the spiritual world that that encompass psychedelics that to help me really get all that I can out of this medicine, out of these journeys. So I believe there is it's time for a reconciliation between the medical and the spiritual, and that there needs to be a new way or multiple ways to deliver these medicines to, again, meet people where they are. And that can be, I want to be met in the medical model. It can be, I want to be met in the spiritual model. But what I prefer not happen is it has to continue to happen in the dark, so that the spiritual people don't have all of the knowledge of medical and are incorporating medical intakes and informed consents and all those really great best practices that happen in the medical side, nor are the medical people unaware of what's happening in the spiritual side. And how do you run a ceremony? And why is a group of 10 or 20 people using a psychedelic, in my opinion, a more effective way to deliver the medicine than a one-on-one for many people? Well, so it's the other skeptical thing that I think about too is
this idea that we're going to have a campfire kumbaya experience with, you know, 20 people that you might not know having this experience without any controls or limited controls.
So I guess the question is then, what are the controls and how do we do responsibly?
Yes.
Responsible ceremonial. So let's talk about that. I mean, the ceremonies that I've seen that are kind of the best practices are where they do ask you for a full medical intake, and then they review that medical intake with a doctor or somebody, a PharmD, the spirit pharmacist. Dr. Ben Malcolm is a great example. He does intakes all over the country for many, many people. So that they know what you're taking, they know your prescriptions, they know your supplements, they know your mental history, they know your physical history, and then they can make an informed decision of what psychedelics are appropriate for you.
Let's take a pause. I'm watching the time and I'm so engrossed in the conversation with you. I'm like, ooh, this is slipping away. We're going to need to take a quick pause, and then we will be right back to continue the conversation with my guest today, Matt Zeman. He is the author of Psychedelics for Everyone, A Beginner's Guide to These Powerful Medicines for Anxiety, Depression, Addiction, PTSD, and Expanding Consciousness. To learn more, please visit mattzeman.com. You can find him on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Matt Zeman. And there might be a period in between Matt and Zeman on some of those. Here comes the pause. We'll be right back.
Research tells us that happiness is good for our health. Happy people live longer, are more productive, and make better partners, parents, and professionals. Want more sound ideas for better well-being? Check out our new bonus edition content, More Mental Fitness by Harvesting Happiness, available exclusively on Medium and Substack. One thing I know for certain, happiness waits for no one, and at times we all need a little support. To learn more about lifestyle management and mental fitness consulting services, please visit harvestinghappiness.com. And we're back, continuing the conversation with Matt Zeman. We're talking about psychonautics, cosmic exploration for skeptics and seekers. Let's get back to it.
So Matt, in the prior segment, we sort of wrapped with the screening process and setting someone up for success who is interested in going on one of these psychedelic journeys. And I'd love for you to continue to talk about that a little bit.
Perfect. So we're talking about the ceremonial setting, and we're talking about best practices in ceremonial providers. And again, there are a bunch of these all over the country. So it starts with the medical intake. I think that's critical. Then goes to an informed consent. And this informed consent tells the participant, okay, you're going to be taking this, that, and the other thing. These are illegal in your area. You have lots of risks, and the risks include this, that, and the other thing. Are you sure you want to do this? And on. I think these can be pretty long documents. So I think that's super important that the person understands both it's illegal and there is a risk associated. We can do lots of things to risk reduce, but there is risk associated with any of these medicines.
Ooh, like what? Wait a second.
Well, we'll take a left turn here.
Yeah, just
risk.
For a sec. Then Real we'll come quick. Back on track.
The great study I always recommend people look at is Dr. David Nutt's study from Imperial College London, where he said, let's look at all drugs, forget how they're classified, and what causes the most harm to self and the most harm to others. On the far end of his spectrum, it's a 73 is alcohol. Most harm to self, most harm to others. For perspective, heroin is like a 55. On the far right-hand side of his chart, he has mushrooms. It's a 6. LSD is a 7. MDMA is a 9. So are there risks associated? There are.
Got
it. Is it relatively risk? Not as much. So it's just, again, people need to know. And what's the difference between a medicine and a poison is dose. So again, if you don't have the pure medicine, that can be dangerous. If you don't have the right dose, that can be dangerous. If you have a history of schizophrenia, if you have if you're in a manic state of bipolar, there's lots of other things that can cause risk. So the medical intake and the informed consent reduces risk, but does not eliminate it. And the person should know that before agreeing to show up.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying it. It was worth the left turn.
The left turn. Good.
Yes.
Good.
Back
Happy
on track.
Day. Okay. So we've talked medical, medical intake, informed consent. Then during the ceremony, the medicine delivered is one that's appropriate. We then get into, you talked about the kumbaya session. In my experience, the best ceremonies are ones where people are given a mask, they're given a mat, they're given, again, instructions, they're given a proper ceremonial experience with all the things that go into that. And then they're doing their own work in their own space. And they might be crying, they might be laughing, but there's not therapy. They're not talking. No one's there saying, oh, Lisa, what you just said or what you just experienced means this. Nope. You're doing your own work. After that period of ceremony is over, then people do get together in sharing circles. And it's very common for, I would say, oh, on this particular journey, I got to hold my dad's hand like 100 times. And you know, what's funny about that is he was a raging alcoholic and had all these anger things, but yet I just remembered 100 times when he was trying to show me he loved me in his own way. Oh, well, that's interesting. And then you might say, well, that reminds me of something that happened on my journey. And it's more like that. You're not interpreting what happened because you're not a therapist. And the whole point of psychedelics, in my opinion, is to journey within and to remember who you are and that you are enough and that you are wise and that you are beautiful and that you are loved. And with that, you've now taken whatever information came from the journey. You have a goalpost and you can move into your life with a new state of neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. And you can focus on the positive and focus on the behavioral change, which ties right into positive psychology, which you talk so much about on this podcast and on this radio.
No, I do understand. What I also think, and this again is the little bit of the skeptic in me, is that the ability to synthesize the experience and integrate it afterward, is it necessary? And it may not be, because I haven't experienced it.
Totally necessary. So it's necessary in multiple points. So I have a book out called Beyond the Trip. It's a psychedelic preparation and integration journal. Integration is where it's at. So yes, preparation is important and having the right set or mindset going in is super important. Having the right setting that you know your people, that you know the rules, that you know that you're safe is important.
Yeah.
And then the integration is where real life change happens, because now you've taken these insights and you first wrote down almost like a document, like this is what happened to me in my journey. These are the things I saw. That's kind of step one right after the ceremony. Step two is a series of prompts or questions over weeks that you are asked, where you're reliving, you're reprocessing, you're thinking about, what did this mean? Why did I see this? Why did I feel this way? What am I trying to do from this? And then we actually encourage people, don't make major life decisions for at least 2 weeks, if not 4, following a ceremony. If it's super important, it's going to be there in 2 or 4 weeks, but just document, think, process. For many people, that means getting a psychedelic integration coach or a therapist or a life coach or any of those types of people who can help process. And the encouragement, again, is not for them to tell you what you think or what happened to you. It's to help bring it out of you and help you set your own pattern or your own goals for the future that you're then going to walk down that path.
So how available or prevalent and available are psychedelic integration coaches or therapists in the US, for example?
There are more every day. And we have companies like Third Wave, Psychedelic Spotlight. Psychedelics Today, Fluence, MAPS, a bunch of people making training available for psychedelic coaches. But then also many, many, many therapists are equipped to do this type of work. And many coaches are equipped to do this work. Again, in the ceremony space, most of the people that we see are kind of referred by therapists and coaches into the space. Friends of friends of friends. And it's really nice when that type of person comes in because they have someone they have a longstanding trusted relationship with that's been working with them.
Talk a little bit about your organization, because you mentioned about the three portals in to taking psychedelics being the medical, the religious / spiritual, and then psychedelic tourism. And you are in one of those three categories.
Now I'm in a couple of those categories. So I have an investment in a telehealth company that works with ketamine. And I think for people in the medical model, there's a number of these companies that do good work. Mindbloom, New Life, Better You, Happy, all kind of do ketamine virtually. And that's a very accessible entry point for many people. In the church world, there's the Sacred Plant Alliance. There's the Association of Entheogenic Practitioners. There are churches all over the country that I work with.
That's amazing.
That are doing this beautiful work.
And didn't know it.
And that's kind of, it's just a shame that it's not able to be more publicly advertised and promoted. So going way back in this conversation to kind of where you started, I do see people over time finding their way to all of these methods. And then you talked about commercialization. I think there, of course, is going to be a commercialization because of the volume of people who need something else, because our current state of healthcare when it comes to mental health just doesn't work. It's failing.
Yeah.
And arguably our current health of religion is failing. People are leaving churches at rates that have never, ever been seen before. And I think they're tired of being told what to believe and how to act and not given an ability to have a direct religious experience. And what psychedelic churches are able to provide to the individual at the individual level is a direct experience with a higher power, or with their higher power, whatever that might look like to them.
Yeah. And I can appreciate that very much. I think that's super important. You know, that we all have our own personal relationship with the divine, whatever that looks like. And this, I do understand that this can be a vehicle or a tool to help connect one to that.
Yeah,
that makes total sense.
Yeah, we're seeing it with mainstream religions, like the Unitarian Church as an example, has going to have a certificate in entheogenic studies from their Star King Seminary.
Wow.
There's a whole Christians in psychedelic organization already established, run by a person named Hunt Priest, who is a priest down in, I believe, South Carolina. There's a ton of different things happening with Judaism and psychedelics, Islam and psychedelics, Buddhism and psychedelics. Of course, the Native American and Indigenous and a whole bunch of New Age as well. So it's not just New Age. It's all over and it's crossing into mainstream religion.
So going back to the commercialization, and we were talking on the break about med spas as one example, where, and I'll go back to that because I think it's one that everybody can relate to, particularly women, where originally we would go to the dermatologist or the plastic surgeon to get Botox or injectables because they were the only ones licensed to perform that service. Then it became physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, aesthetic nurses, were then able to do that in a med spa environment. So it went from a very clinical environment, very antiseptic, to a very plush and relaxed environment, which I think from what you describe is the natural evolution, given all the things we've been talking about.
I think you're right on. And let's stick with ketamine then for just a moment, because it is legal across all the states. There are places, you can type in ketamine clinic near you and you'll find them. There are places that you just come in, they take your vitals, they put an IV in your arm, you have a ketamine experience for 40 minutes or an hour, you recover, they send you home. There's no preparation, there's no music, there's no mask, there's no integration. It's just, they think it's a biochemical reaction and it's legal, it's approved, yeah. It's doctor run. There are other ketamine clinics in America where you go in and they're going to prepare you and they're going to put you into a living room setting and they're going to give an IV or a shot or a lozenge and a playlist and a mask and a weighted blanket, and they're going to have integration afterwards for multiple sessions. And wildly, the price is not that much different,
yeah.
But the consumer doesn't know what they're getting into. So what I say to everybody is buyer beware across the board, regardless of you're looking for, if it's delivered medically or underground or via tourism, ask the questions. What are you doing for me in advance? What is the experience going to be like? Who's going to be in the room for me? What is the experience of the provider? What happens afterwards? And there's no right or wrong answer. These are opinions, but at least then as a consumer, you can find and shape the experience the way you want it to be delivered for you, because you are wise and you know what's right for you.
Yes. Well, and I do think it, when we talk about being the consumer, that buying any product, right? You want to understand what you're buying or what the service is that you're buying. And if this comes under the umbrella of medical care or psychological care or well-being care, being cared for is as important as the drug or medicine itself.
Very much so.
You know, to be nurtured, you know, to help that experience be as positive and transformational as possible.
There are more people involved in the creation of the container for this work to be done in. And that is, people are trusting that when they're in this non-ordinary state of consciousness, that you're going to keep them safe.
Yes.
And what does that mean? It means probably a male and a female in the room. So you have multiple eyes. It probably means some sitters can multiple eyes to keep you safe. It means control over the music. It means clear rules, what's allowed for touching, what's allowed for talking, all of those types of things. And the consumer needs to be able to ask those questions in advance to make sure that their provider is going to do that.
It makes perfect sense. And this is very eye-opening to me, this kind of conversation, because it sort of peeks behind the curtains, right? Of going beyond just the medicine itself, but the business of the medicine and the business of all of this. So,
and the business is, and we get into a whole then discussions of, it takes a lot of energy to run these things. So how do you compensate people to do it? And then for the underground, there's a lot of risk. And how do you compensate to allow those people to live? And in tourism, there's expense in travel and in hospitality. So there's expenses across the board, and there's lots of models. The religious or nonprofit model probably is a little bit less expensive than the commercial model, but there is a cost for all of it. And I would actually, what's interesting as a partaker in this, that you get to a point where you want to give money to the people providing this. You want them to be able to survive and to thrive and to exist. And again, I've realized, oh my gosh, everywhere I look, I have an embarrassment of riches. I'm so lucky to be where we are and to have what I have and all the different things that have been given to me. And if I can pass some of that on and share and allow others to have this experience, I want to be able to do that.
Makes sense. I mean, that is what generates happiness, right? What we're talking about, sustainable well-being, is that people do get their basic needs met, right? Like that they're able to live a life, and this is about a good living wage. This is a bigger conversation than just psychedelics, right? It's about, you know, that we are responsible for one another. So I can't be happy if you're not happy or my neighbor's not happy. Not really, right? It's the idea.
I don't know about that though, Lisa, because that's hard. I actually would argue, I'm going to flip on you here for this. I'm going to actually argue that the realization is that the only happiness that you are in control of is yourself.
Oh,
and
I agree.
Nobody 500%. Can make you feel any way, that anytime something comes up that's negative, that's a mirror. That's something that is an opportunity. And that if someone else, so how do we stay hyper? How do we find the happiness within ourselves so that we can go into the world and radiate that?
Well, I agree with you. And we are, in my view, this is my own opinion of the host, is that the idea that our happiness is interconnected, that, you know, and this is going to sound like a very broad statement in the sense that we are our brother's keeper. It's we are responsible for our happiness, and we are also responsible, the more we have, to go out and do good with those resources, because that leads to the elevation of all ships, you know? That's my point. You know,
absolutely. That's beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. I am solely the purveyor of my own happiness. It is my responsibility. It's your responsibility for yours. But with the abundance of gifts that we do have comes that embedded responsibility to be of use.
Totally agree. I don't want to be misunderstood where I had to wait for you to be happy before I'm happy.
That's conditional. That's not what we're talking about.
That's not what we're talking about. Right. Beautiful. Yeah.
And the fact that there can still be the difficulties in the world that exist. And because there are difficulties doesn't mean that we cannot find and create happiness, because we cannot cure everything, right? So we just do what we can.
So totally fair. Yep. And we are,
we were talking
and, on, and we start same. Local. We start yeah. local.
We
and
start
locals
locally.
Ourselves.
Yes. Yes. This has been a great conversation. My guest today has been Matt Zeemans. Thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate you coming and talking about not only the portals, the way into the psychedelic experience, but also the responsible business side of things and what the consumer should inquire about if they are curious on how to do this safely, responsibly, and with efficacy. I want to give your contact information. To connect with Matt and his work, please go to mattzeemon.com, and that's Z-E-M-O-N. You can find him on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Matt Zeemon as well. And there may be a period between those handles on some of those platforms. He is the author of Psychedelics for Everyone, a beginner's guide to these powerful medicines for anxiety, depression, addiction, PTSD, and expanding consciousness. And just to remind everybody that Matt has a Master of Science in Psychology and Neuroscience of Mental Health with honors from King's College London. Matt, thanks again for being on the show.
Lisa, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, anytime.
Thanks for joining us on Harvesting Happiness today. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen on behalf of my guest, Matt Zeemon, wishing you kind thoughts, kinder words, and the kindest of actions. Until next time, remember, happiness is an inside job. Happiness is your inside job. Please go out and rock your day, and remember to be kind to one another. Want to take a deeper dive into sound ideas for better well-being? Check out our new bonus edition content, More Mental Fitness by Harvesting Happiness, available exclusively on Medium and Substack. Keep harvesting your own happiness anytime, anywhere, from the comfort of wherever you are. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes from wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. To learn more about lifestyle management and mental fitness consulting services, please visit harvestinghappiness.com. Harvesting Happiness and More Mental Fitness are produced by me, Lisa Cypress-Kamen, Andrea Mengele, Robin Boyd, Andrea Daly, and the awesome team at Podfly Productions, including Eric Begay, Kimberly Beck, and Alec Guess, in collaboration with TogiNet Radio, KBUU, RadioMalibu.net, and is available on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.